third year of three summer months looking at the life of Paul. And you're going, oh my gosh, is it over yet? If you were in another church, and there's a great many of these other churches, you would spend 2 to 3 years, verse by verse, word by word, through the book of Acts. You've only spent 9 months on it. So get over it, okay? This is what we do here. We teach the Bible in a practical, relevant way. Now let me ask you this question. Have you ever heard a statement like this in some form or another? Because there's various ways this could be said. My day has gone from good to worse. Actually, it hasn't. Your day usually goes from good to bad to worse. Have you ever had a day like that, a week like that, a month like that, a life like that? Yeah. Continuous downward spiral. Starts off good. The cause is usually nothing that you've done, if you reflect on that type of event in your life, but it's a result of circumstances, we would say, out of your... It's brought on by somebody else or something else. For example, if you follow sports at all, a lot of sports teams start off a season, they've practiced together, woo, we're ready for a good season, and they go out there and it's the first game. They have lofty goals. Win this game, win the league, win the whatever bowl you're playing for, right? And then there's a key injury. Quarterback goes down. Point guard goes down. We're familiar with this in the American sports world, aren't we? And you go, ah. You can hear all the fans. Ready? Ah. But hey, we've got a backup. We pay the starter $45 million a year. You get free tickets to Chick-fil-A. So that secondary guy comes in, and then he goes down, and we all say, ah. We've seen that, haven't we? I coached football for years. I remember 2 particular years especially where that sort of thing happened to the team that I was involved with. And you not only end up losing the first game, second game, but you have a miserable season. All your goals are shot in the whatever, and you don't accomplish anything, and you end up blaming everybody. It's your fault. It's the coach's fault. It's the fans' fault. It's the owner's fault. It's everybody's fault, but whatever happened to us. Gary St. Agee coached football a lot of years. You ever have a year like that? Goes from good to bad to worse? It happens. Has your life ever done that? Has your marriage ever experienced that? You start off going, I love you. Starts off good, doesn't it? I've never seen many marriages start off horrible. But then they become, for whatever reason, a period of bad, and sometimes the bad just slips off the table and becomes worse, if you will. Evie and I came back from vacation. Had a great time out west. I came home. Day I came home, we retired, went to bed. I woke up the next day. The birds are chirping. Chirp. Chirp. Gentle breeze. Sun in the air. And I remember looking out the window of my castle. I feel good. This is the best I've felt good in forever. And then I said the thing you should never say. I can't even remember the last time I was sick. Uh-huh. It's going on 4 weeks now. It started with a cold. You ever have just a common cold? I've gone through trees that have produced Kleenex. All right, then it went into a sinus infection. Those are fun. Try putting your head down when you have a sinus infection. Whoomp. Then it went to an ear infection. Now I have walking pneumonia. From good to bad, I haven't reached worse yet because it could get worse. I feel I'm in the bad stage right now. Doesn't life go that way? At times. We're in Acts chapter 27, because that's what this whole chapter is about. Paul's third missionary journey is in the port city of Caesarea. Paul has been arrested for his faith. if you've been here at all, you know this. He's been the target of an assassination plot. Okay, keep that thought in mind. Jailed for several years to appease the Jewish leaders. What did he do? He was a Christian. We just went through Charlie Kirk, correct? Now everybody in America is going, oh, this Charlie Kirk thing. Whoa, it's terrible. It's terrible. It is, right? But do any of you care about what's happening in Nigeria? Are you even aware of what's happening in Nigeria? Just this week, they showed a common grave of 100 villagers in this little village of somewhere in Nigeria. 100 Christians were slaughtered, not killed. They were what? Thousands of Christians in Nigeria have been martyred for no other reason than they're Christians. Now, we hear about Charlie Kirk, everybody here, because we have the media, oh, terrible, terrible. You ever see 100 bodies stacked on top of each other? Heads cut off, arms cut off, women raped, babies slaughtered, for no other reason than they're what? Christian. That stuff happens in this world. We're in Acts 27. So Paul is in jail. He hasn't done anything wrong. He's suffered three trials. The last 3 weeks, we've looked at these three trials. Now he's on his way to Rome. Started off being great. I'm saved. Seemingly. Has a little good moment. And he could look at his life going, life isn't treating me. But you know what? Life is never going to treat you. Say the word. Fairly. It just doesn't. So you just have to understand, downward spirals are part of life, whether you're a Christian or not a Christian. And Paul is probably thinking the same words some of you might be thinking, if you really followed me here, with the book of Acts 24, 25, 26, especially. Life can't get much worse. It can only get... Have you ever thought that? And later you went, "What?" You said, what was I thinking? Sometimes it just never really seems to get better. So his third missionary journey helps us understand how a follower of Christ, Paul and us, should think, how we should speak, how we should act, how we should respond when stuff starts going down the toilet. Because that's what this message is all about. Stuff happens all the time. How do you respond? Or we've talked about this before. Do you simply react in a self-defensive, selfish mannerism? Do you respond like Jesus, or do you react like the person that God came to save, a lost sinner? When we think of the martyrdom of Charlie Kirk, a lot of people are using this verbiage. Well, Charlie Kirk was assassinated. Have you heard that? Read that? Well, in one sense of the word, if you're a secular person with a secular mindset and a secular vocabulary, you would say Charlie Kirk was assassinated. It was more than assassination, folks. He was martyred. Martyred means you die for your faith. You die because of your faith. You die because your faith is an affront to others. Charlie Kirk was martyred for no other reason than he was and he spoke up for Jesus. Same as what Paul is facing here. Now, at this point, people have asked this question. I've seen it from numerous speakers, numerous pastors in the internet, and they say things like this. Okay, Charlie Kirk's dead. It's sad. It's terrible. Christian, are you willing to die for your faith? That's a good question. Don't you think? It's the wrong question. It truly is the wrong question. Would you die to save your spouse? Would you die to save your children? What about that brown beagle you've got? That big tractor that you just paid off, Joe? Would you die for it? Think about it. What would you die for? Click, click. You don't have much time to react, to think, to respond. You better hope you would die for Jesus. It's a wrong question. Truly is the wrong question. The real question is this. whether that's Jesus or that's the Apostle Paul, the real question, the correct question is, are you willing to live for Jesus? Because in all likelihood, if I wanted to kill you, I could do it in 1 second or less. How many years do you think you have left? How many months do you have left? How many days do you have? I'll dare say you have more than 1 second. What do you think? Do you hope to that end? You hope so. Are you willing to live for Jesus, whether you have to die for him or not? Do you see the difference between the questions? One is very momentary. The other is the rest of your existence, as ever long as God gives that to you. Because this is what Jesus didn't say, die for me. This is what Jesus said in Matthew 16 and verse 24. And I'm going to read this. It'll be on the screen from the New Living Testament. The rest of the verses that will be up there are from the NIV. Are you with me? Here's what Jesus said. Notice he didn't say, will you die for me? Jesus said to his disciples, are you one of them? Are you? Well, notice what Jesus says here. If any of you, any one of you, wants to be my... So you say to yourself, am I really a disciple? Do I follow him? Or do you just attend church? Do you just pick up the Bible when it's convenient? Do you think about him on Easter and Sunday? And what's the other one? Oh, yeah, Christmas. If you want to be my follower, if you want to turn from your selfish ways, isn't that what it says? No, it doesn't. What did Jesus say? You must. This is a command, folks. It's not optional. Jesus said, you must turn from your... So you call yourself a disciple, call yourself a follower of Jesus. Have you? Have I what? What? Turn from what? Notice you haven't... He's not asking you to turn from what the government's told you to do. He's not asking you to turn from what your family's told you to do. He's not asking you to turn from what your peer group says or some... I love this term. Social influencer has told you to do. Turn from whose selfish ways? Yours. Take up your, what is it? Symbol of death. I have died to myself. I connect with Jesus. I bond with Jesus. And what's the words? Follow me. See, the real question isn't whether you're willing to die for Jesus. It's, are you willing to live today for him? And then again when? Tomorrow. And then again when? The next day. Are you? That's what it means to be a Christian. It's not about you anymore. Taking up the cross implies that you surrender, set aside your own personal agenda, your plans, your ambitions, and make Jesus the center of your universe. We've talked about this before. A lot of Americans go, is Jesus number one? Yep. What's number two? My job. And your wife is standing there. Wife. Wife job. It's not a top 10 list. Is Jesus number one? That's not what we're talking about. Is Jesus the center of your universe? With everything else spinning around it at the distance in the intensity in which he wants it to spin. Don't you just love coming to church and have to think deeply? I hate dealing with this all week before I shovel it out to you. Because you got to ask yourself, self, is he the center of my universe? I don't know that. You do. He do. Pretty simple. So when we think about this passage in Matthew 16, 24, it means we need to live for him. Now let's go to Acts 27. There's 44 verses, if I counted correctly and looked at my Bible correctly. 44 verses. There are those churches, they do what's called expository teaching. Word by word, verse by verse. Try doing 44 verses in 40 minutes. Can't be done. So here at our church, we teach in an It's called expository. We go, we start here and we go here and we go here, but we can't go through every verse. So we tend to break the section, a chapter of scripture, a passage of scripture into sections so it's more manageable. It's like looking at a plate full of food. You don't just go, unless you're 2 years old. You take your peas last. You eat your mashed potatoes, a little gravy, turkey. You look at the peas and go, yeah, I'm coming there. A little bit at a time from around the plate, that's what we're doing. I'm dividing this chapter into three sections. Look at somebody. Make sure you hold up three. Say three sections. Do that right now. Three. So how many sections? Three sections. And there's one primary theme. How many themes that we're looking at? One. Now, you can look at other themes. Today, we're looking at one theme. The three sections of this chapter reveal the one overriding theme that we're going to talk about. If we had to look at this chapter, it's in your notes. If you've got your notes, you're online, whatever. You could divide this chapter in three different ways. Okay? Paul exits Israel and sails for Italy. What's he do for Italy? Sails. He's right here, and he's got to sail, because you don't walk on water. Only one person can do that. Well, maybe Peter, a little bit. There's no airplanes, so you got to sail over to Rome. That's a long way to go, especially when the weather is bad. Paul exits Israel and sails for Italy. That's the first 12 verses. Paul encounters a storm on his journey. When I looked at this text, I thought, that's so life. We start off sailing. We're like the little pig out the window. We're enjoying life. Everything's going good. Wind's in our hair. All right. All of a sudden, there's a storm. Where'd the storm come from? You don't know. It's just a storm. Did you ask for the storm? No. It just appeared. So somewhere in here, they come down, everything's start getting about here, and then the weather turns bad. The Mediterranean Sea in late summer, or late fall, sorry, into winter is horrible. You don't sail that in an open boat, not if you want to live. And the crew decides, yeah, we can make it. You ever been with somebody and goes, we can make it? And Tim Reed's not here. We've got this great story. He had a really nice car. And we're driving it. And we're going probably 65 miles an hour in a 20-mile-an-hour zone. Kids, you did not hear that your pastor did that. And then there's this curve. I can take you right down into Penfield, show you the curve. And Tim's driving along, and he starts to brake. I said, don't brake. We can make it. We ended up in a cornfield so far out there, his nice little car wasn't so nice afterward. So they hit a storm, and then they're just thrashed about until they're shipwrecked. So the sailing is verse 1 through 12. The storm is verse 13 through 26. Then the shipwreck is the rest of the chapter from verse 27 through 44. Paul went from good to bad to worse. That's what we're looking at here. Let's look at that first section, 27, 1 through 12. Are you there? Reading verse 1. When it was decided that we would sail for Italy, Paul's out of jail. He got a get out of jail card. Paul and some other prisoners were handed over to a centurion named Julius, who belonged to the imperial regiment. We boarded a ship from that's how you pronounce it. It's five syllables. Ad-ra-mit-ti-um. You say, where's that? Doesn't matter. It's in the Bible. God knows where it is. Doesn't even exist today. But that's where the ship was from. About to sail for ports along the coast of the province of Asia. Remember, Asia is Turkey in this area. And I love this. We put out to sea. Who put out to sea? See, it's one of those things that you read over, but your brain doesn't really, because you're not really looking to study, you're just casually reading to be familiar, but it says we. Not the pig out the window going, we! It's a different we. Paul, who's we? The guy writing the book. Who wrote the book of Acts? Paul did not. Luke. So there's Paul, there's Luke, and there's this guy named Aristarchus. We learned about him in Acts 9, if that rings a bell, Acts 19, verse 9. He was beat up by a mob back in the city of Ephesus. They thought they were getting Paul, they got Aristarchus. I'm not Paul. Smack, smack, smack. Okay, he got beat up because he hung out with Paul. So he's rejoined him. There's at least three believers here. Look at verse 3. Oh, by the way, Aristarchus was a Macedonian. We've learned about that. From the city of Thessalonica was with us. Then it goes on. The next day we landed at Sidon. So if you're looking at Sidon, Paul starts out here, okay, going from Caesarea, going up the coast to Sidon. Not very far, but that's where you would go. You'd work your way up the coast, bring on supplies, let people off, bring on new passengers there. And Julius, who's Julius? Roman centurion, in kindness to Paul, allowed him to go to his friends that they might provide for his needs. Julius is a good guy. He's a Roman, but he's a what? He's a good guy. So Paul's off here. He's going to 7-Eleven. He's visiting some friends. He's texting, doing a little selfie there before they get back on the boat. And they pass to the lee of Cyprus. Where's Cyprus? You see, we're geographically challenged as Americans. Cyprus is here, to the lee. To the lee means away from the wind. Look at somebody and say, lee means away from the wind. Say that right now. Look at somebody. Show what a nautical genius you actually are. Because the winds were against us. When we had sailed across the open sea off the coast of Cilicia and Pamphylia, that's up in this region here. We landed at Myra in Lycia. That is right here. You go, so what? Isn't that the way life is? Don't we all go out on journeys? You're going to Carl's. You're going to Meyer. You're going to see Grandma. You're going to a Tiger ball game. We all go on journeys, don't we? Do you ever, when you go out the door, ever stop and think, I wonder what beholds our adventure? Do you? Or do you mindlessly just get in your car and off you go? Are any of you thinking this thought? I hope we live. Well, where are you going? To Carl's? No, you never think that. Do you realize good stuff and bad stuff can happen to you on any journey of your life? Have you ever taken a step, maybe missed the step, fallen on your face? How'd that journey work out for you? Stuff happens to us. That's life. Didn't mean God ordained it. It just means you were clumsy. So he's got this Roman centurion. He's a big shot. Roman centurions have at least 100 Roman soldiers underneath their command. You don't get to be a centurion until you've got about 15 to 20 years of service, military service, fighting the enemy. Then you get bumped up. We'd call it like a staff sergeant, something like that. Tough people. But he's a tough soldier, but he's not an overly tough person. He's got a soft what? He's got a soft heart. So then they go up the coast. Little picture, I really like this. We see an idea of Paul, maybe Luke writing. We got this soldier, nice guy. They go up the coast, and here's what you do. You go up the safe part of the coast where Paul went, then you switch ships. You got to get a more ocean-worthy ship to go across the Mediterranean Sea. Why? Because there's big storms there. Along the coast, you can see the sand. Not too threatening. Now they got to change ships. They bring on some people. They get rid of some people. Off they go. We're all on a journey. All on a journey. In your life, now tell me if this is not true. At least think about this. You and on every journey, don't you meet people or see people? You see more people than what you meet. Meet means you have a conversation. Here's the thing I've learned on my journeys in life. Some people you meet are harmful. You don't even know it. Flying through Atlanta Airport, I had my passport stolen. Stolen. Not dropped, stolen. How do you know? Because I reached into my bag because my plane was boarding overseas and I went for my passport. Guess what? Wasn't there. And I'm going like this and the lady says, is that your bag? I went, yeah. She said, some guy was just in that bag, took something. I thought it was his bag. I said, what guy? What guy? That guy there. I said, hey! Cross the concourse. Is this yours, kind sir? No, you know what he did? He started running with my passport. My plane is boarding. I'm running after him. That's when I didn't have pneumonia and I used to be in shape. I'm gaining ground. I'm a football coach. This guy's going down. I don't care how big he is. He's going down. He's going to get pummeled by Jesus, I thought. And then he went with the passport in the air and took off. I got my passport, got on the plane. Sometimes you meet people that are harmful, you think? You don't even know it, but they turn out to be harmful. You meet people that are hateful. You don't know it at the time. But you learn to hate them because of who they are and what they've done and maybe what they stand for. You just detest this person. You ever had a creep? Don't look around the room. You ever had a creep where that person just, yeah, you run into hateful people? There are people who are helpful. So you have people who are harmful, hateful, helpful. You ever run into helpful people? I love the guy when you go, you stop and say, can you tell me how to get from here to there? Help. And for the next 15 minutes, you listen to the direction on how to go down here, quarter of a mile, turn right, there it is. They're telling you about Billy Bob. They're telling you about the tree that they climbed. Yeah, they're helpful to some. Then there are people who are hopeful. You ever meet somebody that you're hopeful for them? You're hopeful for what they can do for your business, what they can do for your church, maybe what they can do for your own relationship, for your kids. See, you meet people like that, yeah? And you never know it when you set out on a journey. That's why when I say get off your blessed assurance, walk across the room, get to know somebody in this congregation, you could be meeting your next best friend. Well, I've got enough friends. Let me get your name and address, because you're coming off my Christmas card list with an attitude like that. Okay, we meet people on our journeys, don't we? Yeah, of course we do. When I read this section of Scripture, I reflected about some of the places, some of the people, and just the pace of the journey of my life. People I've encountered, places I've gone. I'm very grateful for that. I'm grateful for what God has brought to me in the good moments of life. Are you? You hope so. And even when stuff starts to go bad, you've got to understand your predicaments in life are nothing more than possibilities. Your obstacles are nothing more than what? Opportunities. So even though things could go bad, even though you're uncertain, I'm not the overwhelming optimist. The sun will come up tomorrow. Not if you live in Alaska. Certain times of the year. Okay? So what I tend to do is look at things and say, what can God use this for? Not complain and gripe and moan about what is, but what could be. Very good. After switching ships, look at verse 9. Paul begins to see the signs of trouble. And it says in verse 9, we had lost a lot of time. The weather was becoming dangerous for sea travel because it was so late in the fall, and it gets horribly dangerous in the Mediterranean. And Paul spoke to the ship's officers about it. Way to go, Paul. I thought to myself, have you ever overlooked or looked past signs of trouble only to face larger difficulties later? Husbands and wives, have you? We all do. In part, some of us are just eternal optimists. Some of us are clueless. But it's easy to look past the signs of trouble, hoping that everything is fine, later find out it's not so fine. As I looked at this passage, I thought, have you ever tried to give advice to somebody about something? And they just totally ignored you, blew you off. Mom and dad, talking to a teenager, have you ever given advice to somebody? And they all looked at you with this smug indifference, this wisdom that they've gathered through 3 years of high school, and went, you don't know what you're talking about. And that's when I go, you don't know what you don't know. I'm trying to save your rear. Okay, how does it make you feel when they ignore you? Not so good, but people do that. Have you ever tried to make up missing time? Oh, I love the, I think it's Alice in Wonderland. Is that it? With a little rabbit, the clock. I'm late for a very important date. And you try to hurry to make up for time, and then you see the little light in your mirror. You know, there's so many lessons from the first 12 verses here that we could learn for our life. Hey, maybe we need to slow down. Maybe we need to think more. Maybe we need to be more observant, blah, 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 blah. That's the first 12 verses. He's sailing along, but every time you sail, there's the potential for disaster, yay or nay. Yay. Number 2, verses 13 through 26, Paul encounters a storm on his journey. Verse 13, when a gentle, get this, a gentle south wind began to blow. Ready? They saw their opportunity, so they weighed anchor, sailed along the shore of Crete. It's a south wind. That's the way sailors want to see the wind coming in the Mediterranean. Before very long, not, notice, it doesn't say, and 33 years later, your day can turn that fast. Have you noticed that? Isn't that wonderful? Surprise! You're sick. Surprise! You got an injury. Surprise! You get a phone call about 7:15. Your father-in-law has passed away. But before very long, a wind of hurricane force. Hurricanes, they have hurricanes in the Mediterranean. The correct answer is, yeah, did you know that? Hurricane force. They don't call them hurricanes. They have another name for them. Called the Nor'easterner, swept down from the island, from Crete, where they are. Bad storms in the Med come out of the northeast. Not from the, they started out, oh, wind from the south. Something's coming behind you. All of a sudden, there's a storm. That is so life. Buy a new car. My granddaughter just bought a new car, new to her, car. You ever buy a car and say, "This, look at me, everybody. It's mine. It's paid off. I don't owe anybody anything." And Bambi is hiding in a tree. Stuff happens. This storm, by the nature of it, called a Nor'easterner, it's a horrific storm. And as many Bible commentators have compared the verbiage that's used here in the original language, and they go back to the time when Jesus walked on the water. Remember that situation? Same type of storm, a sudden fierceness that was not normal. In Jesus' case, that was a spiritual attack. Satan manipulated that storm back in the story of Jesus in the Gospels to bring about harm. Many commentators say there's a lot of similarities here. Paul's off on a mission. Paul's off on a journey. And Satan says, oh yeah, Bucky? We're going to try to take you out here. That is life. Sometimes you just get a storm. Sometimes you get Satan's attack upon your life. And it's really hard to tell the what? The difference. All you know is you're hurting. You're in pain. You've suffered loss. Only at the end of time when we stand with God will he be able to say, here, let's go back a few pages in your life. Let me show you what really was behind this. When you get into verses 15 through 26 of this section, man, we see a difference here between how the world acts and how Christians should act when storms hit you in life. There should be a difference. How you react, how you respond, how you handle the situation. Don't you think? Hello? If Almighty God lives inside of you, His Spirit is guiding you, God Himself is still on the throne, Jesus is in heaven and He's praying for you like crazy, don't you think we should respond a little differently than somebody who is not aware of that and doesn't care about any of that? It's okay to say yes in church. You should be saying yes! We should respond differently. What we see here are people who aren't saved, people who have no use for God, are fearful and they're out of control, or they're grasping for control. Did you see the two things? That's the way lost people try to handle life. They become fearful and out of control, emotional, fall all apart. Or they become mean and ornery and try to manipulate and control all the elements like a chess piece. Whereas Christians should react with peace and self-control, not out of control. Ask yourself, when you look in the mirror, how do you respond to the pressure and tension of life? I lose control sometimes. I try to gain control sometimes. Are you in my camp? I'm glad the rest of you are Christians. I act at times more like a lost person than I do a saved person. And when I read this passage, it makes me think about my life and try to live more for Jesus and less for me. Have you ever taken, I like doing this to people, especially once if they're drinking a can of pop, maybe have bought a bottle of pop and they turn their back, they walk away for a moment. That's what I like to do. You can't do that to water. You can shake a thing of water all you want. You open the water, you drink. Do that with a Coke and then just slide back and enjoy what happens there. There's a minor explosion. Now, here's what we learned. Whatever's inside of the bottle is going to come out. You see, if you got water, water's pretty calm. Shake it all you want. Roll it across the floor. Toss it. You drink. Why? Because it's water. It's non-combustive. It doesn't have the bubbles in it. Can we just break it down? Carbonation. We've got somebody with an education. I use bubbles. Carbonation. Same thing. but if you, whatever's in you comes out of you, especially when it's shaken and not stirred. No James Bond people here, I can tell that. that shows you something about your reaction. It means maybe God's Spirit isn't right in control of you at this moment. Maybe you're in more control of you than what you should be. Paul's trust in the Lord, if you read this passage, wonderful passage, His trust in the Lord, in the God's word, and even in the presence, because you see God through an angel speaking to Paul, he kept his faith. He didn't lose his faith. It allowed him to encourage others, not blast others. It motivated him to witness about Jesus and not cuss and swear and talk like a worldly person. And it allowed him to provide some logical advice, whether it was taken or not. That's what God's Spirit does for you in the midst of chaos. So, simple question for you today is, when you face a storm in life, this could be a little tiny storm, or it could be a nor'easterner. When you face storms in your life, if not, think back to your last storm. Do you keep your head, or do you lose your mind? You know. I'll bet your spouse knows, because they sat there and watched you. That tells you something about where your faith lies. It either lies in God or it lies within your own ability to try to manage situations. So Paul now has gone from sailing. He's got his head overboard with a little spinner, and what's he saying? Whee! He's enjoying life. All of a sudden, the wind changes, and that's how quick life can change. And if the storm continues, and there are storms in your life that will continue for a prolonged period of time. Have you ever had an aging parent with dementia? Have you ever had a parent or grandparent who had cancer? Have you ever watched a child of yours or a grandchild make a series of bad decisions until their life is ruined? You can face shipwrecks in your life. Verse 27. We're going to go quickly here. On the 14th night, the storm's lasted now 14 nights, which is unusual. It's at least twice the length of what a normal northeasterner would be in the Mediterranean. On the 14th night, we were still being driven across the Adriatic Sea when about midnight, the sailors sensed they were approaching land. I don't know how a sailor would know that. That's why they've got the job, and I don't. Verse 29, fearing that we would be dashed against the rocks. Haven't you seen movies where that happens? Doesn't that look like a pleasant experience? They dropped four anchors from the stern, and they prayed for daylight. Have you ever come to the point where your storm is so bad, all you can do is get on your knees and you just pray that it ends? Or maybe that your life ends. Or that somebody else's life ends. But you just know you're tired and you don't want to go what? Any further. That's where he is. This is Paul, the man who did nothing but serve God. God allowed this in his life. 14 days is a long time. Look at verse 39. Bump down to verse 39. When daylight came, they did not recognize the land. It was Malta. They had never been there. That was not their intended journey, as Paul had never been there. But they saw a bay with a sandy beach where they decided to run the ship aground if, what? If they could. Verse 40, cutting loose the anchors, remember they had four, just to slow them down. They left them in the sea and at the same time untied the ropes that held the rudders. Then they hoisted the foresail. I'm not a nautical person, but I've watched movies. They hoisted the foresail to the wind and made for the beach. Can you picture this? Verse 41. But the ship struck a sandbar and ran aground. The bow stuck fast and would not move, and the stern was broken to pieces by the pounding of the surf. Look at verse 42. Okay, it's gone from good to bad, worse. Sailing to storm to shipwreck. It's all over, right? No, verse 42. The soldiers plan to kill the prisoners. What? Lest they get away. Because, Roman soldier, you're my prisoner. If you get away underneath my watch, my life pays for you. Death penalty. So if you're a Roman soldier, how many prisoners are you going to let go? Yeah, because you got to pay for it. You're lucky if they would simply garnish your wages or take away your estate or enslave your spouse and children. They'll probably kill you as a soldier so that you're Thank you. Example to all the other soldiers. The soldiers plan to kill the prisoners to prevent any of them from swimming away and escaping. Verse 43. I just love this story. But the centurion, remember, he's a what kind of guy? Julius? Good guy. But the centurion wanted to spare Paul's life and kept them from carrying out their plan. Remember, he's in charge. He ordered those who could swim to jump overboard first and get to land. The rest were to get there on planks or on other pieces of the ship. In this way, wow. What? Everyone, what? Hey, shipwreck! Welcome to your new life normal. Have you ever heard that? That phrase? You didn't ask for it. You didn't ask to go to this land. You didn't get to want beat up by the surf, but that's your life. You didn't ask to have your spouse die. Welcome to your new life normal. You didn't ask for a disease. You didn't ask to lose your job. You didn't ask for your boyfriend, girlfriend to sayonara and say goodbye to you. You started out wanting to win all the games and you lost them all. Your new life, what? Normal. Have you ever experienced a new life normal? Thrust upon you. You didn't want it. It's all you got. Yes? Do you realize up to this point, this journey has taken about 9 months? Watch this. Whoa. That's was life. It doesn't always go that fast. Sometimes it's a very painful process. So when that happens, how do you respond? How do you react? Here's just some of the ways that you and I, I'll bet, have managed to react to the shipwrecks in our life. You give up or you quit. Amy's mom, my wife, died in my arms. Years ago, 25 years ago. Seemed like yesterday. Hardest thing for me to do was not to hear the news. Was not to call people and tell them. Hardest thing in that whole experience for me to do was as I lay there in bed the next morning, went to bed about midnight, woke up at like my normal time, 5 in the morning, it was to make a decision. Do I kill myself or do I get out of bed? Nobody here will ever know the struggle that I had or the struggle that many of you have had when you faced a shipwreck. True? We can hear it, we can feel it, but you don't know what I felt, and I never will know what you feel. Do you give up or quit, or do you muster something from down within and make yourself sit up? Do you take things into your own hands? Do you lash out in anger or violence towards somebody wanting to blame them so you don't have to bear it all? Do you reach out and help somebody? Julius reached, he didn't have to, but he did. Somebody just helped the guy. Or do you just abandon people and walk away from them, save your own rear? Do you take pieces of what is left in your life, little boards, little planks? I don't even think they had the round donuts on those ships, that, you know, the lifesaver. Do you just take what is left of your life, hold on to it, and try to rebuild a new life? Because you'll never have the same life after a shipwreck. Do you understand that? Never have the same life. It could be similar. Does the name Job ring a bell to you? All Job could do is try to take what he had, live long enough until God opened up a new life for him. Now that's a lot of stuff that I got out of this chapter. 3 sections. Whee! Whoa! Wow. Whatever terms you want. It just went down. So here's your life lessons. If you've got notes, you can fill in the blank. If you're into blanks, you can look at the notes. They'll be online. Here's lessons that Don, your pastor, got from this. First and foremost, God, what's the big point here? You said there's one overriding theme, one underlying theme, if you will, that these 3 sections point to. Here it is. God is always, key word is always, aware. That's your first blank. God's always aware of what's going on in your life. God is always aware, in control, and extremely purposeful. There's a reason for everything that we face in life, whether you like it or not. God wants to shape your character so you're prepared for heaven. In order to do that, sometimes he has to use harsh means, allow harsh means in our life to strip us of our self confidence, our cockiness, our dependence on things in this world, so that we only have one place to look. And what direction might that be? Up. I think many of you have heard this story. It's very, very dear to my heart because my wife was a cross stitcher. If you don't know what that is, Google will tell you. And she would be cross stitching this piece of material with beautiful threads. And if you sat down below where she is cross stitching, you look up and all you see is a wad that is not so pretty. And you're going, that is the stinkingest, ugly thing I've ever seen in my life. But see, that's your perspective from down here looking where? Up. But only when you get the upper view looking down do you see the beauty, the intentionality, the purposefulness, and the face of the one who's doing the cross-stitching. That's God. He's putting things together in our life so that we appreciate Him and we're not hung up on this world. Here's a second lesson. Our predicaments are always possibilities. Our predicaments are always possibilities. Our obstacles are always what? Opportunities. Doesn't mean you see it right off, because probably you're like me. You've got tunnel vision. All you see is the pain, the problem. But God has a purpose behind that. And the third thing is this. We have a choice as to whether we will react negatively, self-defensively, if you will, if that's a word, carnally, like a pagan would to this world, or we respond as somebody who trusts God with what He is doing on our behalf. You either react or respond to life. Does that make any sense to you? That's Acts 27. Surely, my church, there's something there that you can use in your life. You think? I'd like to know if God used any of this in your life, challenged your thinking, made you reevaluate things, some sort of a commitment. Or you're going, you know what, you're an idiot, you don't know what you're talking about. I'd love to have a cup of coffee with you and talk more about this. I'm game for all of it. But if we don't really hear what God's trying to teach us in His Word, we have no growth. And if there's no growth in our lives, we're not prepared to be in His presence. That's why the Bible's here. So I had to wrestle with this all week. Look at how I react. Look at my past. Look at what I'm dealing with now. And I have to deal with this. You just got the privilege of hearing it all in about 45, 50 minutes. I had a whole week to deal with it. As you leave, understand this. There are people out there sailing. Life's good for them right now. There are people who are facing a storm or in a what? Storm. And that's where you can come alongside of them. You can pray for them. You can encourage them. You can support them in some way. And there are definitely people out there whose life has become a shipwreck. And sometimes all you can do is just stand there over them while their face is buried in the mud, in the sand, and say, are you enjoying your life right now? Help them get the dirt out and say, would you like a hand? And try to walk with them a little bit and help them to deal with their new life. What? Say it. Normal. Father, for our church today, use us as your people in our community. As we prayed earlier in various parts of the room, there are people where we live, where we work, where we go to school that need you. May we be a little Jesus to them this week. And if we get a chance to tell them the gospel about how much you love them and how Jesus died for them and how they can have a new life, may we take that opportunity. But really, Lord, a whole lot of people out there just need a hug. They need some love. They need some encouragement. They need somebody to lean on. May we be those people. We all said, amen. God bless you.